experience?
It was just really hard. It was super hard.
And you didn't give up?
No, because I'm a dummy.
Do you think that's what it takes to make it in hosting and television?
I mean, I think it's, you got to do it when it doesn't make sense and keep doing it until it makes sense.
Hello, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us for another wonderful episode here on Suits and Shoes. Today, we have Jeff with us. Jeff has an extraordinary resume. Jeff, I've been following you along for some time now. My sister calls you the Instagram dad of Springfield, Missouri.
Yeah, yeah.
60 million views and counting, Walmart, you name it. It seems like TV shows, podcasts, hosting birthday parties in New York, extravagant ones. Jeff, what does it take to be Jeff?
Whoa, starting out with a real question. What does it take to be me? Well, you got to have I would call it a stew of confidence and insecurity. And it needed to like percolate every so often and be like, I got to make something. And yeah. I'd say that is a horrible answer that I just said.
So how did you start? Like, you know, today we were talking about it backstage. Like, it seems everyone has a TV show or a podcast or video. Mm-hmm. Did you just jump into it and were like, hey, I'm Jeff, I'm going to have a TV show? How did it start for you?
Yeah. So I moved to Springfield in 2003 and, ended up about a year later joining a group called the Skinny Improv that was doing improv comedy. Around that time, Skinny moved into a space downtown. We started doing shows every Friday and Saturday night. And so for me, like, I had lived in New York. I had interned at Late Show with David Letterman. But then I met a girl, ended up moving down here. And I was like, I guess I'm foregoing my comedy dreams. But then as it turns out, it was like the perfect place.
Yeah.
And so I got to do that for a long time. And then from that, we'd experiment with like a 10 p.m. show, just kind of try different things. And yeah. I was like, I want to do a late night talk show. And so we tried it. And I did that for 5 years as a live show. Yeah. No cameras or anything.
10 seasons, if I'm correct.
Well, that was on TV. So we did 5 seasons with just like that.
Yeah.
And then I'm condensing everything here. But then I moved to LA to go give it a shot.
Yeah.
Ended up being about a year, came back, got the show on TV, and the show that most people knew was on TV for 10 seasons.
Wow. That's amazing. Wildest story from that show.
Wildest story. Oh my gosh. Let me see. I mean,
we can share 2 or 3 if you got 2 or 3.
Yeah.
I just feel like you got that one story that was like the highlight for you.
I'm usually the highlights, you know, like they say.
You don't have to say any names.
Tragedy plus time equals comedy.
Yeah.
So like a lot of them are like bad stories. But like here's a good one. So we would have animals on from Wild Animal Safari. I think it's maybe changed its name now. Maybe it's just Animal Safari or something.
Yeah.
They would bring like these awesome animals.
To your actual studio.
Yeah. So we tape at the Galois, and they brought like, I can't remember, because we had them on a few times because it was so fun. But one time they definitely brought like a small alligator and also like a small kangaroo. And I can't remember if it was all the same night. And then also like baby tigers. And the tigers got like motion sick on the way there.
Oh no.
Something. They start just shatting everywhere.
Oh no.
In like the truck or whatever. And then I think they're like rolling around in it. So we get there and that smell is unbelievable. So then they're in like the bathroom trying to like clean them
off.
And I should also remember having the kangaroo out there. And the alligator was coming next, and behind the stage curtain, I could hear the alligator like hissing. And I was like, what? What happens if this thing jumps out of their hands? Is it going for the front row? So everything ended up being fine, but I liked that there was this element of like, this could go horribly wrong.
Yeah. And on camera.
On camera, yeah. So there's levels to it where like, if I always say, like, what's great for a late night talk show is that if something, if it goes perfectly, that's great. Yeah. If it goes really bad, that's awesome too, because you get to like comment on it. But there's limits. If it goes really bad, an alligator has jumped into the audience and is eating people. It's not good.
And I'm sure that was like in your mind, like this can go wrong. And then you're trying to be on camera at the same time.
And like, did I pay for the liability insurance? How does this work?
What is the limit?
What's the limit? Are alligator attacks covered? Luckily I never had to go down that road.
That's awesome. I want to circle a little bit to early childhood. I remember just for myself, and I want to speak for an entire generation, how hard it was through middle school and high school per se in regards to fitting in. And then you have this pandemic of bullying that's just been probably an ongoing generation to generation problem. I recently read some statistics about how much of a problem it is.
Mm-hmm.
Even amongst like the well-known or popular kids, how it's called, and how that affects, you know, the ability for individuals to pursue a career on camera, or it's behind the camera in the studio, podcasting, influencing. And I just see so many young individuals today trying to like break that barrier of insecurity that was put onto them by the society that they live in.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have issues like that in your early childhood that kind of hindered you from starting your career as a host?
Interesting. Growing up, I was pretty shy. Like my mom will tell people what I do now, and they're like, oh, really? Okay. I was not the class clown. I was like one of the shyer kids. I mean, not like entirely, but I mean, middle school, I went to junior high. I was definitely like trying not to stand out. Definitely. And I wonder if it's gotten better. I'm just looking at social media and stuff, or, you know, you'll see kids like celebrating a kid that has special needs or something like that. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, that's amazing. And then I wonder if it shifted some in that way. I've talked to some teachers that say that maybe it has, but we didn't have any online stuff.
Yeah.
I didn't growing up. So, I can remember being picked on some, but like, not in like a relentless way.
Yeah.
Did you experience that?
Yeah, it was really hard for me through middle school. I'd say by senior year of high school, I kind of had it figured out.
Yeah.
But early high school, man, it was rough. The bullying and just it was overwhelming. And then
Being an immigrant, you think?
Yeah, I think it was part because I was trying too hard to fit in.
Sure.
I feel like if I was just myself, it would have been a lot easier. But like the harder I tried, the more pushback I got. Made me over try.
Yeah.
So it was challenging, but you being shy, that definitely does not. Tell me more. What caused that transition? I mean, you're not shy.
Yeah. And I remember saying at that time, like, I'm not shy, I'm quiet. If that made any difference. But like, I think a lot of good, at least my start was in improv.
Yeah.
And a lot of improv comedians weren't like the class clown. Like the skills in improv are like listening and being part of a team and that sort of stuff. And so I found that that's the case with a lot of people that are in comedy and stuff. It is, I think it's often not the biggest, loudest person, but like sometimes it is. I don't know.
Do you feel like there was a life event or something that caused you? Because for me, it was just, I was just so tired of being put down, being underestimated. So it was like there's this build-up moment, and then finally, I can't remember the exact event, but something triggered me to like literally come out of the box and just say, hey, you know what? I'm going to be bold. I'm going to be myself, and I'm going to create my own story. Did you have an experience like that, or just kind of evolved?
I don't know if it was an inciting incident, but I remember like my senior year of high school kind of coming out of my shell, and it kind of like, for me, it was like I was myself around my family, and then like the kids in the neighborhood, and then like eventually school, and then like, so for me also then like in terms of growing confidence in comedy and stuff, then being able to do shows here all the time, and getting that like foundation built, I guess, And then I was like, okay, I can do it here. Okay. And then I was like, I got to go give it a shot in LA. Yeah. Before we had kids is kind of the thing that incited that. Yeah. And then my experience in LA, I didn't have any like big successes or anything, but I did have this feeling of like, oh, I can hang. I can hang. Yeah. Like everyone that's out there are the ones that are out there trying it. It doesn't mean that they have some supernatural ability above someone from the Midwest, but we tend to like have that in us somehow. Yeah. And so I think that gave me the confidence to come back and like go for it with TV and stuff. Cause I was like, I'm gonna hang.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Talk to me about the time you're coming onto stage. I know that's probably one of the hardest things for a lot of people. You know, it's one thing to be kind of learning to be talkative and like you said, in the family setting to be yourself. Mm-hmm. But how was that transition of being yourself onto stage, or do you feel like you had a different persona when you came onto stage?
I interviewed someone once who I asked a similar question to, and they said, myself on stage is still me. It's just a happy, confident version of me. But they're all those things are within. Yeah. So I've never felt like I'm putting on a persona or a character, but it is like, I don't know, the most fun version of me. But
on stage.
Yeah. I mean, I feel very comfortable on stage. I feel not comfortable hour four working on a spreadsheet. So like, it's kind of like the opposite. I always,
you just kind of like feel more natural.
Yeah. So like it, I always just think people have different skill sets and that sort of thing. But yeah, being on stage has, and it wasn't early on, but like from having hundreds of improv shows and hundreds of mystery hours and a lot of the different things I've done, I'm like, I'm pretty like, I just feel comfortable.
Yeah.
But I tell my accountants, and they're like, hey, you didn't do this right. I'm like, I know. Asking me to do financial things is like me asking you to get on a stage.
Like, I'll stay on stage.
Same comfort level. You on a stage is the comfort level I have putting together financial things. So they're kind. They're good, kind people. Yeah. But I'm always like, I don't know how to do this.
When did you realize that? Because, I mean, going from kind of feeling shy to, hey, I'm comfortable on stage.
Yeah. You know, I had, when I was 10 or something, we went to Disneyland, and like whenever they asked for a volunteer, I was just like jumping up and down, raising my hand, and I got
wait, how old were you?
I was 10. And so I gotta be like, it was the first time I ever seen like a green screen. I gotta be like Elliot from E.T. on the bike with E.T. in front, like pedaling, and then he soars up into the night sky, and they had a green screen that are projecting that. So I gotta do that, and I gotta be in some sort of Wild West thing. So like, I always had it in me, but just didn't have the, I guess, confidence to go for it.
Yeah. Let's talk LA. I feel like a lot of people would want to know what happened in LA. So you just pack a bag and go, or do you have like an invitation? What was the first step to go to LA?
I had an invitation from no one. No one was expecting me to be there.
So you just,
no one asked me.
You just improbably just went.
So I, it was like,
that's was a big step.
June of 2010, and my wife and I had our first like real conversation about having kids. You know, you kind of like chat about it, and it's like, okay, when are we going to do this? And I was like, it was like, oh, there's a timeline on all this. I mean, once I have kids, I can't go out there. I'd always like thought about it. I mean, I guess I could, just not as easily. And I was like, I gotta go to LA. So the hero of the story is my wife, Michelle. So then she...
So she kind of encouraged it.
Yeah. Yes, encouraged it. Was at least okay with it. So...
And okay encouraged.
Yeah. So I... then in October, I was like, I like the idea of this. I have to like actually see if I would like it. So I went out there for like a week, and I was like, okay, I think I'd like it. So then February is when I moved out. But like, I had a job. I worked with the Community Blood Center of the Ozarks, speaking at things, working with volunteers. And I quit that. I quit the Skinny Improv. I quit the Mystery Hour. I was like, here we go.
LA.
And I drove away. And my wife, being the responsible one, she was like, we have a house and I have a job. I need to stay here. And I was like, that makes sense. So like once a month we'd see each other. Then she came out for the summer. And yeah, I mean, I did.
Talk about sacrifice.
Yeah. So I.
That's how much you believed in it. You just.
So my goal, I had two goals. One, make it big. Two, go through the process of going for it. Because like if you haven't ever this idea of like Hollywood's like this. A mountain that you don't just know.
I mean, I think it's Mount Everest. I mean, even to me, with my foot in the door, I feel like it's not scalable. Like it's
the right, impossible. Yeah. And there's like, I don't know what the trails are. I don't know how do I do this? Like, and there isn't any playbook, but like, you just have to like, go for it. So that was the first time I'd really like, I'm going for it.
Talk to me about that emotion. So you leave your family and you go to LA, nothing lined up. What are you feeling?
Well, let's see. I mean, I was crying for the first part, driving out of Springfield. My wife's in the driveway, and I'm like, goodbye. So, yeah, and like, I spoke to this backstory, but like, I wasn't a guy who like went for things, and I was like 33. Like, it's not like I was like 21. I went a little later. So like, but the times in my life when I've gone for it and like faced the fear and been like, I'm just jumping are all the times I've gotten to do the cool things and like gotten the things that I want that feel like there are, I heard Will Smith say once that they're on the other side of fear. And so like those times that I've gone for it are the times where new and interesting things happen. Wow. So, but I'd never like, quit everything. Started driving.
I mean, it sounds like you did it, like a fresh start or a new start.
Yeah. So the one big advantage I have is that one of my childhood friends and his parents live there. So I lived in his parents' spare bedroom.
It's a really humble beginnings.
Yes, yes. And like I after a while, like I'm wearing out my welcome. I don't know if I can go down to the kitchen again. So I just had like crackers under my bed and I was like losing weight.
Wow.
I was like, I need to stop exercising because I don't want to like lose more weight.
While your wife is back in Springfield, Missouri waiting yes. for you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I did like a bunch of bad auditions. I took improv classes. I did some stand up and I just kind of went for it. I knew the idea was either she'd move out at some time or I'd move back at some point. And I was like, I'm just going to go all the way in and like try all of it. And I did. And then after about a year, she was like, I think it's time for you to come home. And my bank account said, we agree. And, I came back.
Wow. That's a strong, strong beginning. So how do you feel like that laid the foundation for your next step in the journey to come back to Springfield?
So my wife said, time for you to come back in like September. And I said, let me finish this improv class and come back in December. And around that time, it was KSFX, Fox affiliate in town, who had gotten outbid for their Fox affiliation. So they formed KOZL, an independent station, which is still around. And they said, we're looking for original programming. And I was like, I got a show. And so I met with them as well. I was in town and they said, well, when if you come back, let us know. And so then, like I said, I gained confidence. Strangely, I gained confidence from not succeeding while I was out there.
Wow, that's deep. You gained confidence from not succeeding. So it wasn't a failure. It was like a, almost like a building block.
Yeah, and it really changed my... I mean, I think I innately have a big fear of failure, but like doing something and failing and being like, oh, I'm okay. Is like very confidence building. Wow. I think so then I came back and we got the show on TV. I talked to the station guys again and we got on TV and
in Springfield, Missouri.
Yeah, and we weren't any good
according to
me.
I mean, did it? You got views. It kept building onto your career.
Yeah. So like, I'm saying, like that first year, it was like people were looking to me. They're like, "How do we do this?" And I was like, "I don't know."
So you got one year, almost like a failure learning experience in LA. You got another year of what you think was not so as much success, failure, learning experience.
It was just really hard. It was super hard.
And you didn't give up?
No, because I'm a dummy.
Do you think that's what it takes to make it in hosting and television?
I mean, I think it's... There's a couple of phrases I like to use, which is like... you got to do it when it doesn't make sense and keep doing it until it makes sense. Mm. And... The other phrase I like to use is like, keep not quitting, which is another way of saying like perseverance, I guess. But like, but it's a little different because you have all these opportunities. There's so many times I should have quit and I didn't. And had I quit, then it would have stopped too early, I think.
Yeah.
And so, I think people look for things to make sense or make financial sense or make time sense right away. And I don't think that's the way it works.
Yeah.
I really believe in like, you have to put the cart before the horse a lot, like in a way where
that's contrary to what society teaches though.
Right. But I think it's like a paradoxical truth where it's like, you have to like risk it to get it.
Yeah.
If you don't risk it, you will not have it. You won't experience failure, which is good, but you also won't get the thing that you want.
Yeah. I like that. I like that. Man,
put that on a clip.
Yeah.
Clip that. Put it on a short.
I don't know if I should make a whole short out of that or cut it out so I don't get in trouble with my family. My siblings always tell me, Paul, don't put the cart in front of the horse got to go first. But I agree. I remember when I started my business in my mom's garage, I sold our house. I sold my wife's car, kept my car. Similar story about sacrifice. We moved in with her parents. So that was kind of the trade-off is we get to live with your parents, but sell the house and your car so I can commute to work at my mom's house. And we started in her garage. It was a two-car garage. We renovated an Airstream, a couple other units, and that's when we realized, like, you know, we didn't have, I think at that time we only had about $10,000 left after we paid off all our debt.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's not even enough to get a commercial lease. I remember calling buildings here in town, landlords. I'm like, hey, can I lease your commercial space? And they're like, yeah, send us 2 years bank statements, your website, business card, license, insurance, all that. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
I have nothing. I don't even have a name. I don't even have a business name.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, I'm just going to start my mom's garage. I'm just going to take that step of faith.
I love it. We had to do, when we got on and stationed in Kansas City, we had to get E&O insurance, errors and omissions. I think it's basically like if I were to accidentally say something slanderous about someone and got sued. But I had to fill out this form that was for like studios. And I was like, I don't know what most of these words are.
Yeah.
This is like years in.
Yeah.
And I was still like, I don't know what these words are. So I sent it off and I was like, I don't know all this stuff. Here's the best I could do. And I got it. But like, but yeah, there's all this stuff you don't know.
You had mentioned something that really caught my attention, and that's you were able to make that sacrifice of leaving your family behind to pursue your career for, you know, in Hollywood per se. And so how does that sacrifice look like throughout your career now? So we're into year three, Springfield, Missouri, your TV show starting to take off. What family sacrifices are we talking now?
So, I mean, a lot of like... I mean, I mostly got like things done for the Mystery Hour, like when the kids would go down. So like I was working 8:30 to midnight or one, like most nights. So a lot of that, a lot of sleep sacrifices. And then like, to make it all work, like I couldn't also have like a job. So that's when I started kind of getting into traveling and hosting stuff.
Yeah.
So there's some time sacrifices there too. It takes like everyone kind of being in on it as well. So yeah,
Yeah. How do you fit, like, because I'm getting kids, they're pretty small early on in your career. That takes a lot of time commitment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your wife takes time commitment. How do you make all that work?
Yeah. So I think the thing I sacrifice the most in that sense, because being a good dad is like the most important thing to me. And so I think I sacrificed my free time and sleep the most, probably. And yeah, maybe that, I don't know if that was good of me.
I mean,
but that's the thing. I don't want them to sacrifice so much, but I also think, like, if I'm running a thing, like, I need to be the one working the hardest.
Yeah.
So we also, like, scheduled things so that would work out, you know, like the show aired weekly, but we would tape it once a month. So it's not like I'm doing it constantly. Yeah. Throughout the whole thing, I was just like, I'm swinging for the fences. Let's go for it. Let's totally go for it. And so there's this middle path I think I sacrificed, like, which is like, I don't know how to articulate it exactly, but like every opportunity, if it was like, let's kind of go for it, or let's medium go for it, or let's go for it, I would always go for it. And I hadn't been that person before, so it was good practice. Like, I always think that, like, risk and that sort of stuff is a muscle that you have to, like, work and so that it feels comfortable.
Yeah. You think there comes a point where it feels comfortable? Give me some hope.
Comfortable-er.
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe I'm only year four in, so I got a lot to catch up to you, but I don't feel anymore. I mean, I feel like, how would I word it? Like, I know the outcome will be good, or I can make it good.
Yeah.
But man, that fear.
But it's got to be, like, strategic. Like, it would be silly to risk everything all the time, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, there's some strategy involved with it, to the extent that I strategize anything. But I don't know. Like, I wonder. I think some people are just born risk takers, and I am not that person.
Yeah.
So, like,
yet you took so many risks.
Right. So I think that, like, my hope would be that I'd be more inspiring than the person that's like, I've always taken risks. It's no big deal.
Yeah.
Like, I have to work up the courage to do it, and I'm always a little uneasy with it. So, I hope that my story would be an inspiration to someone that's like, but I've never been a risk taker. Yeah. But there's, like, small ways to do it too. Like, to start, like, just kind of building up that muscle. Yeah. You don't run a marathon starting out. Like, you work your way up to it.
Right.
So I think, looking back, I can see how I was working my way up to being more comfortable with it.
Yeah, I definitely agree. My family tells me I was a risk taker from early on, but I mean, I always felt inside that fear, the insecurity. Middle school and high school didn't help either.
Yeah.
You know, and you get so much of that negative feedback, that negative energy. But I definitely agree, strategize. If you can strategize and have a backup plan to your backup plan, and kind of almost in a sense overthink it, but don't overthink it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that helps a lot with it too.
Yeah.
You had mentioned you spent a little bit of time in Hollywood, then back to Springfield, Missouri. That's a big contrast.
Yeah, especially, it's a reverse Brad Pitt.
that's like, you know, you got Hollywood, which is Hollywood. I want to get too much detail without stepping on toes. And then I'll speak boldly about Missouri, why I love it, the Bible Belt of the world. You know, very conservative, very kind of like simplistic, per se.
Mm-hmm.
How do your personal values align with all that? Did you have to adapt to Hollywood, or were you able to be yourself in Hollywood and then come back here and feel like you're at home?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of thought that I wouldn't love LA, cause I was picturing it, like, years ago, I was picturing it like, I'm just going to be in a car on the freeway. People aren't going to be nice. And I found it to be, I loved it. I really liked it a lot. Wow. And, like, maybe if I was younger, I might have stayed out there longer. I'm not sure. But what I like about Springfield is that there's, like, I feel like Springfield is, like, a little unfinished. Mm-hmm. Like, there are some cities where you're, like, you already got everything.
Yeah.
Cool. Good job. I will visit you. That's awesome. But I like being a part of like joining in some like forward momentum and like being a part of like kind of making it what you want it to be. So I found that to be really a lot of what has kept me in Springfield, kept me interested. Like when I joined the Skinny Improv, downtown was like just kind of on the upswing. Man. And so being a part of that was really fun. And so I've always liked that aspect of it, that you can, there aren't necessarily all of these layers of barriers to like, reaching a person or being like I'm working on a shoot right now and like, supposed to shoot it yesterday and the day before the location fell through. And so then I'm on the phone calling places for like a certain look of a place, but you can like reach people.
Yeah.
And so that's something I really like about it.
Yeah. I can see how that can be a challenge in somewhere like LA. So you didn't find your personal views conflicting when you were in LA or versus when you came back here?
No, I think you always find your people. I don't know.
Why I kind of asked that, I one of my inspirations is Mark Zellberg and the stuff that he's done, and Wahlberg, excuse me. And so he recently moved out of LA to get his kids out of that kind of the culture that's kind of cultivated there over the last decade or so. And so I was just kind of curious, you know, what kind of impacts that may or may not have, or something someone should consider going there.
Oh yeah. No, I loved it.
That's awesome.
I really liked it. Yeah, it's, I mean, and the weather is like good in a way where you don't, it's not like you walk out every day and you're like, this is a glorious, beautiful day. It's that you walk out and you're like, I don't have to think about if it's going to rain later. I can just
or if it's gonna
wear
be
this
freezing.
Outfit. Yeah. Yeah. You know, like here you're like, do I need a coat for later? So yeah. Yeah. I really like, I mean, yeah. I lived in Iowa City, where I'm from, Springfield, New York, LA, lived in Wales studied abroad for a semester. And I don't know, I just kind of like finding the things in every place.
Yeah, I like that, finding the things in every place.
Yeah.
So you've covered a lot of ground between childhood to where you are today and then countries. What would you say are the key factors it takes to walk in your shoes, to be able to cover so much ground?
Oh, the key factors. Well, a couple of years ago, I needed custom orthotics because I'm getting older. And like I was having foot problems if I'd exercise. And I'm like, I guess I'm at the age where I want custom orthotics. And then, but they wouldn't fit all my shoes. So I still want to like have nice looking shoes, but also have custom orthotics, which maybe sums me up pretty well. So
how did you merge the two? That's key right there. Did you make your own shoe?
Yeah, my metaphor starts breaking down pretty quick. What's the take? I mean, what I really like is, I think that one thing I really like, there's like the putting on a show and being on a stage and doing that sort of stuff. I really, really like. Well, I also like, I'm really cheesy about community and stuff like that. So like what we had with the Mystery Hour is, I like to say, it was like concentric layers of community. There was the people, the writers and like the production company. We'd have meetings and like everyone was like all in on crafting this thing. Then there was like the sponsors that really helped us do it. Then there was the people that like came to the live show that helped us have like a big live audience. And there's the people that were watching on TV. And like, and there's this aspect, like I was saying with the shoot, like I have this other shoot I'm working on for next week where I was like, I need an old timey like newspaper bag and I need, and I put it out there and all these different people are like, I got one, or you can talk to this guy. Yeah. And like, that's just something that I love. And so, so as far as like walking in my shoes, there's like this aspect of performing, but then there's this equal aspect of like this kind of bringing people together that is really invigorating for me. And so I guess that's part of how I'm made.
Going on and adding to that, let's talk wardrobe. So I've seen a little bit of your Instagram and Facebook, wardrobe, and it seems like it's so, like, do you have like, hey, this is my go-to outfit? This is my go-to outfit on screen? Or are you more like for me, for example, I wear the same thing everywhere. So whether I'm at a church event, a sports event, I'm ice skating, or I'm on studio, I kind of have the same outfit per se.
I like that you threw in a bunch of things and then also ice skating.
Yeah.
Are you an ice skater?
Yes, I love ice skating.
Really?
I don't have time for it, but every moment I get, I love ice skating.
Did you grow up with it?
No. So growing up, I really wanted to. It's not only kind of like a cultural thing where I'm from, Ukraine, but it's
also hockey, or also just like figure skating?
Yeah, hockey, figure skating is big, but I didn't get the opportunity to. So growing up, I kept telling myself, I'm going to ice skate more. When I get the opportunity, I'm going to ice skate. And so now that I have the opportunity, not the time to do it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, one of my things on the vision board is I'm going to have my own ice skating ring whenever I build a custom home.
Yeah.
Just so I can go ice skate whenever I want.
I love that. Yeah. Anyway, what was your question? You threw me
off
with ice skating. Oh yeah, wardrobe. Well, so let's see. For like hosting things and for my show, I was in like a shirt and tie. I would wear jeans and a tie and a blazer and a shirt.
You weren't in shorts or?
No shorts, yeah. And
you know what I'm talking about.
yeah. So I keep that for like hosting stuff. But I also I hosted this big birthday party in New York last week, and I needed to have like a tux. So I already had like a jacket and a bow tie, but I needed like tux pants and suspenders. So now I've kind of got that down, tux or more casual. But then like everyday sort of stuff, it's more like this. If I ever get a compliment on anything I wear, it's nearly 100% something my wife bought me.
Yeah.
So like, I don't know. I think I'm pretty basic without her, but like, I've kind of like, it's something I never used to care about, but I actually kind of care about it professionally.
Yeah.
At this point. So I just put a little bit of thought into it every day.
Yeah. So if we need inspiration or more details, we need to talk to your wife.
Yeah. She'll be like, oh, that guy doesn't know how to dress. I save him.
Yeah, I could definitely relate to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was, I remember my original outfits. I mean, you couldn't tell me apart from my employees. I remember one time walking on the production floor, and we just hired a new employee, and she had come up to me. She's like, hey, and she introduced herself, and she's like, what role are you in the company? And I'm like, I do a little bit of everything.
Yeah. You'd be good for undercover boss.
Yeah. Well, now they've changed, you know, my wardrobe.
And
they used to insist on slacks, but I transitioned to golf pants. I just love, they're so comfortable. And
yeah.
So yeah, you'll find me probably any day in golf pants and a dress shirt.
And things have gotten so much more casual in the last few years, too.
Unbelievable. We came onto Drury campus today, and I love Drury. You know, it's like, I feel like it kind of defines Springfield.
It's a classic looking college campus.
Yeah. And then the bell must have rung or something. Kids come out of every building, and I'm like, whoa.
Yeah. I always think, like, because I fly quite a bit, and I'm like, I want to just wear a suit one time when I fly. Like the old days, they used to be like, you got to dress up to fly.
Yeah.
You got to dress up. And I was like, I wonder if they'd treat me different if I was just like wearing a suit.
VIP treatment, or like looking at you funny.
Oh, this way, Mr. Houghton.
Sir, business class is this
way.
Yeah,
we have something above first class if you'd like to sit there.
We have the captain's quarters.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. But like dressing up a little bit helps.
Yeah.
I always think like when I was in college, you know, more of the age of like looking for love, I was like, I wore a hat and a hoodie every day. And I was like, why aren't any girls interested?
Was it like were other people more formally dressed than you?
No, I just think if you try just a little bit, and probably if there's any women watching this, they're like, yeah, just try a little bit as a guy, probably stand out.
It wouldn't be hard today either.
No,
like,
just
when
a little
I saw
bit.
On campus today, I'm like, I couldn't tell if I was in the gym or if I was on a college
campus.
True. And it was Drury. Like, it's more of a private university.
Yeah.
You know?
But, yeah. We're all going casual.
That's awesome. So inspiration, you know, I feel like in every entrepreneur's journey, there's someone that's inspired them. Who's your inspiration?
My inspiration. For me, there's like the show business aspect of it and the entrepreneurial aspect of it. On the show business side, I mean, like, David Letterman, Conan, like, those are two of my biggest inspirations, like, growing up, for sure. And then beyond that, like, I don't know, like, I always kind of wondered, I want to be in, like, or work in, like, nonprofit or, like helping people in some way. But I also want to do entertainment. And I remember like talking to my mom about that, like after I was getting out of college. And then I kind of was like, I'm forgoing the nonprofit side. Ugh, here we go. But then like doing entertainment has kind of like helped me gain a platform to do some of that other stuff that is also interests me. So we did like different fundraisers with the Mystery Hour where we helped eradicate $8 million in medical debt by like, we didn't have a ton of money, but we could gather people and got donations for that. And we got donations for Hot Hands for unhoused people 1 year. And then we've done a few other things like that. And so like, I'm inspired by people doing like that aspect of things
doing
too.
Good.
And like, yeah, kind of seeking a balance.
That's awesome. I think there's a lot of that going on today, especially with kind of like our generation of successful Hollywood stars that have kind of came to a point in their career where they're like, there's got to be more to it than all this money, because they've now, you know, owned the mansions, owned the sports cars.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing, it feels like every day more and more successful, famous people turning to full-on philanthropy work.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's really inspiring. I want to get to that point where I realize it's not about the money, meaning like I have a bunch of it, you know what I mean? Where I'm like, oh yeah, I've made so much money, now I'm bored with it, I'm gonna give it away.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's ever gonna happen. I'll just do it now.
Yeah, I remember my inspiration early on had to have been when, I forget who, someone told me, Pavel, you just gotta shut yourself out from this world and work so hard and so long that when you stop to look up, the people that were kind of pushing you back or telling you can't do it or looking up to you.
Yeah.
And I did just that in my life. Yeah. I remember it was pandemic. I got myself off the social media, completely deleted off all my devices, even disconnected from the news.
Mm-hmm.
And the news plays a big role in that, especially when it's a lot of negative press.
Yeah.
And I literally just focused family, work, and church, my faith. And I remember it was probably two and a half years later when I look at my bank account, I look at my business account, I look at my personal finance statement. I'm like, wow, in the standards of statistics, I'm the 1% of 1%. I feel like I made it. Mm-hmm. And I looked up and I kind of started following up with people in my life and sharing my story. And they're like, wow, how did you do it? And so for me, that was my advice. What advice would you give yourself, younger version of yourself, or today's generation? How do you make it successful as a TV host?
I would say, I heard this advice from someone once, which I loved. This was a friend of mine living in Hollywood, and she said someone had told her this, so I always pass it on, that to make it, you have to have two out of three things, talent, luck, and perseverance. You don't need all three, but you have to have two of them. And surely you can get two of them. And I was like, oh, that makes it feel kind of doable.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think about that. And then in terms of like social media and stuff, I heard, this is like stuck with me. I heard, I'm not going to credit this well, but like someone on a podcast that was like a psychologist or something. Podcasts go into me and I'm like, this is awesome. And then they go out and all I can do is like horribly paraphrase them to people. Yeah. But anyway, this person.
Give me your version. What do you remember?
Yeah. So this, I can't remember who it was, but the person said, and it was like qualified, like psychologist. They said, all of our thoughts are downstream from what we put into our brain. Mm. And I was like, oh,
wow.
Like phone or whatever. I'm putting negativity and anxiety into my brain and wondering why it comes out that way. And I was like, oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Dang it. You're right. Yeah.
So what's next for Jeff? I feel like I'm one of many, especially here in Springfield. We want to know what's next. What should we expect from your, you know, next steps?
So what I've been doing the last couple of years is one of the Writer's Room Creative Comedy Agency doing comedic videos for brands and stuff. And then I travel and host things as well. But I've got a couple ideas I've been working on that could be cool. I'm not really saying what they are yet.
Don't say it. Just leave it that. Talk about hosting. You hosted a birthday party in New York City?
Yeah. It's this huge birthday party. A guy's 60th birthday party. And there was like ballet performances.
Wow.
There's people on stilts. There was a 20-piece band. There's... and me as a whole, it was a whole shebang.
Wow.
And it was like super fun. So yeah, I do like such a variety of like fundraisers or, just corporate events. I'm often brought in, people are like, we need to make this a little more fun. I also travel with the Mystery Hour some. So like we did one in Iowa City, Iowa, my hometown last year. I'm doing one in a couple weeks for, a chamber of commerce for their banquet. I'm doing one same thing in Texas in March. So like just kind of like the idea of like we can make your messaging more entertaining and fun and put it in a late night style, late night talk show sort of context.
Yeah.
And guess what? I know how to do it. So I've been doing that. But yeah, I am kind of like getting the pull back to doing a show. I mean, that show is what I want to do.
That's exciting. That's where you feel yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
That's awesome. Well, I hope it works out for you, and maybe one evening you'll find me on there.
There you go. Yeah. You can swap places.
Yeah. I'm early on in my journey, and I've just, the amount of work it takes to pull off a podcast, I can't even imagine a show.
Yeah.
How? Like, just how?
I mean, like I said, we did it once a month.
When do you sleep, I guess, is the question.
Right, but like, it wasn't very long ago, and I look back, and I'm like, how did I do that? Like, because it was like, you get done with nut one, and then another one's coming up, and it was, you know, we'd have like 500 people there, we'd be flying in a guest, we'd be putting on 3 episodes, so we're shooting all these videos, and writing all this content, and coordinating everything. And that was probably the hardest part for me, was just the coordination of like all these things. And I don't know, man. I don't know how I did it.
It's crazy because social media puts on this like persona of you show up in the studio, you get someone hands you a cup of coffee, you sit in the couch and you talk. But that's not the case, right?
Right. Yo, yeah. I mean, we used to like, I had my set in storage just at a self-storage place, and like, I would have to get a box truck from the Springfield Arts Council. I had to get the day before. I would go get it. Someone else and I, we would go load it up into the truck, load it to the galois, put it up, and then at the end of the show, we'd get back in the truck. So at like midnight that night, I was at a storage facility unloading.
Wow.
I was like, David Letterman didn't have to do this. But it was fun, but like I loved it. But like my version and my experience of doing it is having a part in like everything. Wow. So like, if there was someone out there with a ton of money, it's like, you know, what we need is the Mystery Hour, but you just host it and write. I'd be like, easy. Yeah. I'm not lugging anything. No lugging. My experience is heavy on the lugging.
Yeah. But I think that's what you got to do. I'm even looking at some of the more successful podcasters today, whether it be, Kevin O'Leary or Patrick David Bett. They still put in a lot of work. They're still very involved with small things like camera positioning.
Yeah. I think you have to. I'm not sure I would actually like it without being involved. Like, you have, like, it's your baby, you know, you want to make sure everything's right.
Yeah. I really think it's a false perception today that you just come in, someone hands you a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
You got to be involved, whether it's the day of, the day before, coordinating, even the host, you know, you can't, it's kind of hard to have someone coordinate that for you. Even if he's an agent, you still want to be a part of that.
Totally. Totally.
Yeah. That's very exciting. So I guess you can't really tell us what's exactly next on the horizon, but we're going to be following very closely to see.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing.
We'll see. It'll be a surprise to all of us.
If you had to, kind of summarize your career, looking back, what's one like major mistake, and how would you have done it differently?
Well,
how can I save 10 years of mistakes? I guess, how can I get there quickly? Is there not really a shortcut to it?
Well, people have asked me similarly, like, how'd you do that? I want to do something like that. And I'm like, great. It's going to take you years. Like,
years or a decade or.
Yeah. I mean, I started it in 2006.
Wow. That's.
And like.
That's almost 20 years.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you just kind of like, it's that 10,000 hours thing. You just kind of got to build up that foundation. And I'm sure other people could have done it faster. I don't know. But, I realized that I could have, I didn't think about this, but I could have like gotten more sponsorship out of it being strictly just the live event side of it. And, that would have been good if I didn't do that.
Yeah. You wouldn't have to get those phone calls from the wife saying, hey, look at the, open
yeah, exactly. Your exactly. Yeah.
Our mortgage is due in 2 days.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's amazing. Another thing that I was really curious about is hard moments. I remember more recently, I shared this on LinkedIn recently as well. You know, it was end of the year. We were counting on a bank that had kind of given us like a soft approval promise for a fairly large line of credit that we need for our new factory.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I better say the dollar amount so that it kind of puts in context, so a $5 million line of credit. Mm-hmm. And we're really counting on it. And whenever we went to kind of pull on that promise, we were told, you know, economic downturn, we have to reassess Q1 of the following year.
Mm.
It's like, whoa, there goes your funding. You know, you're in a moment of like, you know, what do you do?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's in that moment that too many people quit. Mm-hmm. For me, it was just that fear. You know, like, what do? You have so many people counting on you. At that time, we had over 40 employees.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, you got to put on a smile and just kind of figure it out. And mm-hmm. so I went and I reached out to a handful of bankers that I've met in times past. And I just shot them an email. And I'm like, hey, this is the situation I'm in. And like, Pavel, we've been wanting your business. Like, we'll get you an offer. And like that same day, I had two other very attractive offers on the table. What was it for you? Like, what was a career highlight moment of like, uh-oh, the rug was pulled out from underneath me? Because surely it happens quite often, right? In the life of an entrepreneurial TV host. And
Yeah. Well, I mean, there was a moment after our first season at the Galois, like we weren't drawing big crowds yet. And it looked like we weren't going to be able to shoot there anymore. And so I started, this is kind of odd, and maybe you can relate, maybe you can't. It might just be my mind. But like when like something goes wrong, or you're up against it, there's a part of me that likes it. That's like, you're just like, all right, we got to figure it out. And like, it makes me more action oriented than other times where I'm like equivocating a little bit. Like, should I, then I'm like, let's go. We're figuring it out. Like yesterday I was looking at this location to try and like, this one that had fallen through. I was looking at this other one and I'm like standing in this, or trying to shoot in like a old warehouse type thing. And I'm standing in this place that where the ceiling and the roof is no good anymore. And it's water everywhere.
Oh, no.
And I'm just standing in water. I'm like, I don't know what is in this water.
We're going to make it work.
So back to the glory. So then we start looking at other places. And, but then like someone helped us kind of like bring it all together and figure out a solution, which ended up being great. That's but awesome. there was a couple of weeks where I was like, is this over? I don't know where to go. So that was definitely one of them.
Wow. That's amazing. I would like to, kind of tie it all together. And the book that I'm writing, What It Takes, it's kind of interesting how you kind of structured it in key points of kind of like chapters or levels through your life and how they were experiences that built on to where you are today and where you're going to be in the future. And I similarly wrote in my book, the seven kind of key factors in my life that brought me where I am today. You covered kind of more strict ones. What would be more of like a funny kind of funny moment, something that you need to keep in mind as you're going on this journey? For you, 20 years. For me, I have a 10-year goal and plan in mind. Share something kind of funny, whether it's advice that you got or a moment that kind of just adds a little light and color to your journey.
So when this is a good story. So when I, like I said, I went out to LA for like a week before to see if I would like it. I'm on my flight from Springfield, and I hear a woman on the other side, a row back, talking about how she works for the TV show Community. Mm. And I was like, all right, buddy, you got to go talk to her. It's going to be awkward, but you got to go do it. And so then I remember being dark. It was a later flight. And like when someone beside her in front of her had gone to the bathroom, and I was like, that's your chance. So I like lean over and I'm like, hey, I understand. I heard you saying you work for Community. I'm going out to Hollywood to kind of give it a shot. I wonder if you would want to like talk to me. Would you meet with me? And so she was like, yeah, let's. I think she set up for like 9 a.m. the next morning. So I go to like the Paramount lot. And oh, wow. It's this old storied lot. And I go to meet her, and we had this great conversation, and she was like, I lost your number or else I would have canceled. But then when I moved out in February of that year, she got me an audition at Community. But it was actually I think my first audition ever. I never auditioned for anything here because people would see me on stage and be like, hey, would you want to do this? And I was like, I don't actually know how you do this. So I go, you sign in. Someone told me about the signing in part. But the day before, I'm like, there's my lines I'm auditioning for, and then there's other lines.
Yeah.
And I was like, who says the other lines? Do I say them? Do I wait for a pause? Is there someone else that says them? And I was like, okay, you gotta just go for it. And I can't remember what I did, but I think I said my lines and their lines.
So you're talking to yourself.
Yeah. Or else I just went straight through.
Yeah.
But soon after, I know that there's a casting person on the other side of the table that says the other lines.
Oh, no.
So I auditioning for an NBC show. And clearly don't know what I'm doing. And it's one of those stories where I'm like, this makes me feel uncomfortable when I tell it.
That's too
funny. There you go. You got it out of me.
I got the funny story. Mission accomplished. Well, everybody.
I did not get the role.
You didn't.
No, I didn't.
I'm surprised. I feel like they should have said okay, this guy is just too goofy.
They're like, you should be auditioning something.
We can form you. We can.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, everybody, that'll conclude our episode of Suits and Shoes, What It Takes. Jeff, I'm really thankful for joining us. And I think you shared a lot of gold nuggets with us. So thank you for that.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
In this episode, we're going to give out an iPad on your and my behalf to one of our listeners. And so subscribe, follow us.
Give it to me if you get it. We'll go halvesies. We'll share it like a timeshare.
What's the best way to contact you? Someone was interested in hosting their 60th birthday party.
Yeah. Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, website, thejeffhouten.com.
That's awesome. And you're very quick to respond. My team can vouch for that.
Occasionally.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in.